morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about the Flathead National Forest, a lawsuit against Northwestern Energy, and how people in Whitefish are pushing back against white supremacy. It's Monday, December 30th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. A relatively warm and dry December has made for a slow start to the season for many Montana ski areas. The Missoulian reports several ski hills across western Montana have only opened between 30 and 45% of their terrain. Lookout Pass marketing director Matt Sawyer says it's not the typical start to a ski season for the mountain at the Idaho-Montana state line, but he says the slopes are in pretty good condition, and forecasters are calling for a few inches of fresh snow in the coming week. A Flathead Valley conservation group is objecting to a project that would create 24 miles of new non-motorized trails on the Flathead National Forest. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports.
Keith Hammer with Swan View Coalition is formally objecting to the Crystal Cedar project, which would provide some logging opportunity but also create a 24-mile trail system north of Columbia Falls. Hammer argues the trail system would displace grizzly bears and says it's part of a greater trend of promoting recreation over wildlife on the Flathead National Forest.
It's all becoming about business, and the public can just get in the back of the bus.
The U.S. Forest Service issued a draft decision for changes on Whitefish Mountain Resort last month and approved the Taylor Hell Roaring Project, which would provide 28 miles of new trails near Whitefish. It also recently provided just 6 days of public comment on a shuttle service for cross-country skiers. Hammer argues that the Forest Service is limiting public input by asking for public comments during the busy holiday season. The Forest Service could not be reached for public comment in time for this story. The 45-day objection period for the Crystal Cedar Project opened on November 14th. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
Alaska Airlines has announced plans to increase the capacity of popular early morning and mid-afternoon flights from Montana to Washington State. The Missoulian reported Thursday that flights from Missoula to Seattle are expected to increase to a 119-seat Airbus, a mainline aircraft. Alaska Airlines officials say the larger aircraft will start landing May 21st, and the upgraded flights would take off at 6 a.m. and 2:50 p.m. Officials say those flights previously used a 76-seat regional jet that will continue to be used on three other daily flights. Alaska Airlines officials say an Airbus will also be used for one round-trip flight each between Billings and Seattle and Bozeman and Seattle. A shareholder of Montana's largest electric utility has filed a lawsuit claiming that the company blocked his clean energy proposal from a 2020 shareholder vote. Kayla DeRoche reports.
Ovando-based attorney Tom Tossel is suing to include his proposal for review and vote in Northwestern Energy's annual shareholder meeting in April. He filed the lawsuit in Missoula District Court last Monday. Tossel's proposal cites concern over climate change and criticizes Northwestern Energy for leaning on natural gas generation over renewable energy sources. Tossel wants a shareholder vote on his proposal, which calls for Northwestern to replace its coal-fired generation at the Colstrip Power Plant with renewable energy by the end of 2025. His lawsuit claims that he's held the necessary number of shares for more than a year, and the company is therefore legally required to present his proposals to other shareholders for review. Northwestern Energy wrote to its governing entity, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, asking for approval to omit the proposal from its annual meeting. Northwestern spokesperson Jody Black says the company believes it violates SEC regulations.
The SEC has some history on this and guidance. Among that is that if a proposal likely crosses a line of micromanagement if it involves intricate detail or seeks to impose specific time frames or methods of implementing complex policy.
The lawsuit comes amid ratepayer backlash against Northwestern's drafted energy procurement plan. The plan projects how the company will meet its customers' electricity needs over the next 20 years, and it leans heavily on oil and gas generation over renewable energy sources. Northwestern Energy also recently announced it intends to purchase an added 25% share of Colstrip Unit 4 amid news that other owners headquartered in Washington State are pulling out in light of new legislation phasing coal out by 2025. Tom Tostel did not reply to YPR's request for an interview by the deadline for this story. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
A U.S. astronaut has set a record for the longest single space flight by a woman. NASA officials say Christina Cook on Saturday broke the 288-day record set by former space station commander Peggy Whitson. The 40-year-old electrical engineer from Montana has been in space since March 15th. She's expected to spend about 11 months on board the International Space Station, falling short of astronaut Scott Kelly's 340-day U.S. record. Russian cosmonaut holds the world record at 15 months on a single mission aboard the former Mir space station in the mid-1990s. It's been 3 years since a prominent neo-Nazi website called for a troll storm of internet harassment of Jewish people in Whitefish. Through that chaos and threats of violence, community organizers, city officials, and residents learned how to systematically push back against white supremacy. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports that success has become a model for others.
The Jewish community from Whitefish and throughout the Flathead Valley is gathering for the first night of Hanukkah under watch of armed security. That's a change prompted by the 2016 cyber attack called for by Andrew Anglin, publisher of the neo-Nazi website The Daily Stormer. Hillary Shaw is leading the congregation through songs, but she pauses to celebrate another year free of a large-scale attack.
And it's important for us to take a moment and hold tight to each other, honor one another's recovery, honor one another's healing.
Back in 2016, Anglin published the personal information of some in this congregation over a perceived slight against a family member of prominent white supremacist Richard Spencer. Victims of Anglin's attack received phone calls and social media messages containing death threats and violent anti-Semitic slurs. One voicemail included the sound of a gunshot. Anglin was ordered by a federal judge earlier this year to pay $14 million in damages to one of the Jewish victims. Shaw says the high-profile defeat may serve as a warning to other white nationalists hoping to target the Flathead Valley, which hate groups have long tried to brand as an Aryan homeland, according to state and national human rights groups.
I don't think it will impact how people feel, but I think it will make people think twice before they are so emboldened and entitled in their white supremacist speech and activities.
But even if it doesn't prevent another large attack, many in the community say they are prepared. Flathead Valley-based nonprofit Love Lives Here formed a communication network with the Whitefish Visitors Bureau, the city, businesses, and community members during the troll storm. Sherilyn DeVries with Love Lives Here says it provided a way for accurate information to get out to the public.
What white supremacists try to do is stir up chaos, and so by everybody running around not knowing what to do, then they're actually in charge.
When Anglin threatened an armed neo-Nazi march through Whitefish in early 2017, Love Lives Here, the city, and police pushed community members planning to block the marchers to instead put on a community party supporting the Jewish community away from the march. But the march never actually happened. Whitefish Visitors Bureau and city spokesperson Lisa Jones says the party gave community members a safe place to be heard.
And there was a good energy about it instead of being on the street where there could potentially be conflict.
Jones says it also allowed the city to protect its reputation by providing good press about the community's response, which is good for an area so dependent on tourism. 3 years later, this partnership continues to come in handy, and it's a model locals are trying to spread. Love Lives Here is asking the city of Kalispell to form a similar partnership following racist graffiti at a local park. DeVries spoke at a recent city council meeting.
When it comes to white supremacy, we seem to have a revolving door in the Flathead Valley. Leaders keep coming in and thinking they can get a following, and we've been pretty good.
Only a couple of council members expressed support, but non-elected city officials say they are interested in working with Love Lives Here. The nonprofit's efforts also caught the attention of community organizers in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, who adopted Love Lives Here's name this fall after white supremacist flyers were found at local businesses. Western State Center helps communities organize against white supremacy groups nationally. It's been receiving more calls from communities asking for help dealing with white supremacy in recent years. Lindsay Schubiner with the center says it points to Love Lives Here as an example of tried and true tactics.
When communities come together and speak out really powerfully and clearly and in a united voice, that really closes the political space for white nationalist and alt-right groups to operate.
Schubiner says an organized response also lets targeted community members know they are supported. Back at the Hanukkah celebration in the Flathead Valley, Hillary Shaw says the support in 2016 helped the local Jewish congregation move forward.
We will be the congregation that survived this event, that was strengthened by it, that was harmed by it, and it's part of who we are now.
A sign of that strength, she says, is the ever-growing number of Jewish households that joined the congregation, both during and after the 2016 attack. I'm Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.